Good morning. So I think one thing, is that volume okay? Does it seem loud or is it about right? Okay. I think one thing we've had in this session, we've had a strong encounter with Zen forms, and particularly Orioki and meal serving. So this was a new practice. Orioki was a new practice for many of you, and I think you met it with good energy and. It seemed like it went okay. When we were eating last night, a thought came to me about Elizabeth Warren. Elizabeth Warren has a saying in her presidential campaign. She says, "I have a plan for that." And it occurred to me that if Zen was running for president, Zen would say, we have a form for that. So, you know, we don't ask you to do too much innovation. You know, we have a saying, don't set up standards on your own. So if you think, if you come to a place when you're doing some task in a Zen place and you think you've got a new and better idea about how to do that thing, check it out with someone. Ask someone, you know, with more experience, is there a form for this? What's the form for this? And maybe there won't be a form for it. But it's good to ask. That's the main thing. See if there's a form for it. And then, because you know, the idea of the forms is not so much like adherence, you know, to the strictness of the form. It's that, you know, we do things together, in the same pattern and in the same way, and. You know, we're not trying to, you know, do a lot of innovative thinking, actually. You know, that's not the point. The point isn't innovative thinking. The point is to create an environment where we don't have to do much thinking at all. So this is the benefit of forms and also the benefit of, like, you know, people aren't doing disparate things. They're kind of doing the same thing together. As we do Orioki, everybody does, you know, opens their bowls together. Pretty much everybody lays out their napkin together. Everybody takes out their chopsticks together and so forth. And the server comes and we bow to the server. So I don't have a lot more to say today, but, well, maybe I shouldn't start that way. That's not a good way to start. We'll see how much I have to say. But I thought I'd say a little bit more about the case from yesterday. It's called Shaoshan's Reality Body. And in the opening of the case, as you might remember, he asks, that the Buddha's true reality body is like space. It manifests appearances or forms in response to beings, like the moon in water. And then he asks his compatriot, how would you describe or explain this principle of response? So that's the main question in the case. And so I'll tell you a way that my teacher talks about the principle of response, how he sometimes explains the principle of response. And he uses the analogy or the instance of a baby crying. And he says, when a baby cries and his or her mother is there, milk begins to flow from the mother's breast just when she hears the baby crying. So this would suggest, you know, that the principle of response is kind of a wonderful analogy, because it would suggest that the principle of response has certain characteristics, such as being a compassionate response, such as being a caring response, a nurturing response. It suggests that the principle of response is like that. And it also suggests that the principle of response is a mindless response. There's no effort on the part of the mother to produce milk. It just effortlessly, mindlessly comes in response to the baby's crying. So, you know, we have a scripture called the Lotus Scripture, the Lotus Sutra. And there's a story in the Lotus Sutra about Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva of compassion. And that Bodhisattva is another being that responds to the cries of the world. And basically, the chapter about Avalokiteshvara tells us all the ways that she saves us from calamity when she hears us cry. When she hears the cries of the world, she has myriad circumstances. She comes to people's aid. That's what the sutra, the import of the sutra says at some length and with many examples. So I think it's also possible to say that the principle of response manifests in response to Buddha. Buddhas hear the cries of beings who are suffering, and they are one of the ways that we suffer is that we suffer because of being kind of enclosed in a ego, encaptured definition of the self, and being enclosed in that, caged in that, we suffer. And Buddhas hear the cries of people in those cages, and they come with the keys to free beings. So then we have in this case, going back to the case, We have two examples presented of the ways that the principle of response manifests. And one is in terms of practice. Actually, the donkey looking into a well, I would submit, is talking to us about our practice, our kind of conscious, effortful practice, and the well looking back at the donkey is that mindless aspect of our practice, that effortless aspect of our practice. The well looking back at the donkey. So it seems to me that these are, I thought of it in terms of a symphony, like our practice life is like a symphony, and it has two movements. A symphony with two movements. One practice with two movements. And the first movement, we could say first. I think it actually kind of comes first too. The first movement of the symphony in this view is that we make some effort. You know, we come to this place and we sit down in a cushion and we sit upright. We're careful about how we hold our hands in this mudra. We keep our neck long. Look down at a 45 degree angle. Keep our eyes slightly open. Breathe gently through the nose. And then, you know, as thoughts come, we're consciously aware of thoughts. And when feelings come, we're consciously aware of feelings. And when sensations in the body come, we're consciously aware of sensations in the body. So this is like conscious effort, part of our practice. We bring some consciousness to doing this practice. So in the case, we could say this is like a donkey looking into a well. In the case, there's that saying, the donkey looking into the well, is eulogized in a poem that comes later in the case. And so that phrase, the donkey looking into the well, is eulogized by the phrase, the falling flowers consciously go along with the flowing stream. The falling flowers consciously go along with the flowing stream. And then, you know, the second movement of the symphony is this idea that our practice is effortless and mindless, and that there's nothing we need to do. In fact, the less we do, the less effort we make, the more this aspect of the practice is nurtured. This is Suzuki Roshi saying, You know, in, right off the bat in Zen Mind Beginner's Mind, right off the bat, you know, we're not even ready yet. And he says, there's no you to say I. Such a strong statement right off the bat, you know. It's just like in his first meditation instructions. There is no you to say I. You know. So, yeah, you could say so the second movement is the movement of no self. And in the case, we could say that that's, you know, the well looking back at the donkey. And that phrase is eulogized also by the poet in the, who makes a commentary. And he says, the flowing stream mindlessly carries the fallen flowers along. We should be so lucky, huh? We are that lucky, actually. It's not like you have to get lucky. It's so we are that lucky. That there are these two aspects of the principle of response. And when you kind of come, and you know, of course, Sesshin is a good place to be, and to enjoy the mindless response of Dharmakaya Buddha, the mindless response of the principle of awareness in the world. Sesshin is a good place to come and enjoy that. You know, the second, we talk a lot about we talked a fair amount about Dharmakaya Buddha here, but the second body of Buddha is, and we say it also in the meal chant, Sambhogakaya Buddha, and that's the bliss or reward body.
Lochana Buddha.
Sambhogakaya Buddha. That Lochana appear Sambhogakaya. Right. Yeah. So this is the bliss reward body. So this is the body that a Buddha enjoys. As a result of his or her wonderful karma, pure karma, the reward. And I think in Sesshin, we get a little reward body, you know. We get a little, maybe we get like a little finger. Reward body. I don't know if we get the whole body, but maybe we get the little finger reward body. And maybe 2.5 days sesshin, yeah, probably little finger. 7 day sesshin, whole hand. 90 day practice for it, period at Tassajara, whole body. Very good. So last night I recited a poem. It was a poem from Han Chan, and I love this poem because of its great encouragement to us, you know, to keep practicing, keep moving on, keep clarifying our understanding, keep clarifying our understanding of Dharma. He says, who takes the cold mountain road takes a road that never ends. The rivers are long and piled with rocks. The streams are wide and choked with grass. It's not the rain that makes the moss slick, and it's not the wind that makes the pines moan. Who can get past the tangles of the world and sit with me in the clouds? In our next, after our next period of Zazen, we'll have Cook's Jindo. And then we're going to have Buddha's Enlightenment Ceremony. And we're going to be celebrating in the Buddha's Enlightenment Ceremony, we just talked about it the other night. The awakening of the Buddha, when he saw the morning star. We're going to be celebrating this moment 2,500 years ago when Buddha saw the morning star and said, according to the Book of Serenity or Kaizen in the Transmission of the Light, I and the great earth and beings, we all wake up together. We all wake up together. We all have come to sit in the clouds with Anshan. And I was putting on the scarf for Prajnaparamita today. I thought, oh, this is a friendship cloth that I received from Lama Jinpa. But anyway, when I was putting it on, I thought, oh, she's sitting in the clouds, just like the poem. Prajnaparamita is sitting in the clouds. So, we can celebrate this, thing that happened so many, centuries ago, this great enlightenment event, but I think it's wonderful, and I always love this. It's really quite a special time of the year, and it's quite special today, actually, because today is Rohatsu. Today is the eighth day of the 12th month. So we do this Sesshin, on the first Saturday of the month, because that's our day. But it just happened to work out this year, and it maybe won't work out again this way for seven more years or something like that. It won't work out to be the eighth, but today is the eighth. And so, it's not the eighth in Japan though, right? So we missed that, or it's still to come. I can't remember which, in any case, it is special that it is the eighth day today, and the day that's traditionally celebrated for Buddha's enlightenment. And it's just what I want to leave you with is that I feel that, yes, we're celebrating Buddha's enlightenment, but, the thing that really to be celebrated is that we have another day to practice, and we have another day to realize, and we have a continuing opportunity to renew ourselves and to, take the road that never ends. Take the road that never ends. Who takes the cold mountain road? Cold mountain road is a road of practice. You take a road that never ends. And to feel grateful for that. Well, it's a wonderful life in my view to have found. Not necessarily easy. There can even be pain coming up doing this practice. In fact, it seems to come into view rather strongly sometimes. But still, having another day to renew our practice is what we're really going to be celebrating today. So if you have anything you want to bring up, we can do that. Jeff?
Is Cold Mountain an actual place, or is it just a metaphor for a temple on high? Or, you know?
Well, it's an actual place in China, and I had the privilege of actually going there, which will be always one of my great memories of going to in 2017 on a China pilgrimage with Upaya Zen Center. We visited in Zhejiang province. We visited the place where it's said that Han Shan's cave is, and we walked up the hill to the cave and visited his... It's a very large cave. It's like the cave is, I think, bigger than this room. It's a big open cave, you know. And so, you know, maybe he had a hut in the cave. It wasn't the kind of like you couldn't live in this cave, just, you know, out there. But maybe he had a hut or something in there. So you could definitely have been quite, protected in this cave. I mean, it was deep, very deep, deeper than this room, bigger than this room, but quite open. So yes, it's a place, and it's not too far from Tien Tai Monastery, where he is said to have visited regularly when he needed company, when he wanted to be with people. He was a hermit, but he was also a poet, and usually poets, you know, need people once in a while. So he went over to Tien Tai Monastery and visited. And they have statues to him there, and we got to go there too. So yeah, it's a place, Cold Mountain. But it's also a metaphor, right? In this poem, it's a metaphor, and maybe that's best. You know, it's best not to have been to this cave. It's best to just to have Cold Mountain as a dream. Larry? Oh, Dave, I mean, sorry.
I was just curious whose translation that...
Oh, that's Red Pine's translation.
Gary Snyder translated... a slew of Cold Mountain poems.
Yes, he has.
In one of his books. And I went home last night and started leafing through it and kind of thought, well, okay, this is... It wasn't Snyder's translation that Jim was...
right.
that Jim was reading.
Yeah. Well, I was... Actually, the one I was... I forgot to bring it last night, so I confessed. I looked at my phone to see, look for a translation, and it was different than Red Pine's too, but I kind of pieced it together because I was just reciting it from memory last night, but it's similar in any case. I like the translation. These lines, it's not the rain that makes the moss slick. It's not the wind that makes the pines moan. This is just so evocative to me of of our introspection, our meditative introspection. Do you have the mic for a reason, Karen?
I was given the mic, and so now I'm going to say something. I did have a comment that I'm not sure how this coincides with your movement, your two movements, but I think it's interesting and maybe ironic. It seems ironic, at least at the beginning, that with Zen also, I mean, we have these forms that allow us to not think. Hope, you know, I mean, allow us to be free of our, maybe of our creativity in a way. But then, because of the forms and giving the mind a rest, then spontaneity and sometimes a more, creativity often arises out of that, and spontaneity is also highly valued in Zen, I believe. So, the river mindlessly carries the flowers. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if that relates to or coincides with the creativity part, or maybe the creativity is a third movement. I'm not sure.
Well, I think it does coincide with that statement, and also I think it coincides with favoring a source as a translation of emptiness versus the void. You know, take on it is it gets to that creative aspect of nothingness in a way that that the void, it could get there, but it's a little harder, it seems to me. When you hear the source, you think more of this creative wellspring of life.
I think this is an example of the inadequacy of words, because I prefer source too, but in thinking about it, source can have the connotation that there's something there. Hmm. And so I was thinking of physics, which I always go to when I'm thinking of these and they talk about the phenomenological field of possibilities is infinite, and somehow or other that's kind of what I think of in when I'm thinking of emptiness, that there is this infinite field of possibility.
Or a field of blessings. As we sometimes
blessing.
Feel
there's
blessing.
Some curses there too, I think. You know, it's just an infinite field. And I do have that question, you know, because in Buddhism we believe, and I believe, that compassion comes out of that possibility. But if you believe that, then you believe in something. Rather than saying the field is just infinite possibilities, could be good, could be bad, could be anything. You know what I'm saying? So I struggle with that a little bit.
Well, here's how not to struggle, I think. Not last night, but the night before, it was raining, and Karen and I came home, and there's this cat that lives around our house, and he's not our cat, but he lives around our house, and And we just let him live around there, and he does whatever he does, and somebody in the neighborhood is feeding him, and he's an old cat, and we always see him lying there, and we wonder if he's died, you know. But we don't have a relationship with this cat, but he's there. Well, the other night we came home, and it was raining, and the cat was lying next to my neighbor's house. And both of us, we just came home from sitting, you know, and both of us felt like this won't do. It won't do to have this cat sit lying out in the rain. Now, we might have done that in any case, I don't know, but it was immediate, like Karen went and got a bed that we already had and put it on the back porch thinking the cat might wander back there where it was covered and sit in the bed. And I said, well, I have a little house that I built, and I'm going to go get that. And I have this little house, and I brought this little house, and it has a way of getting in. And I brought it near the cat, you know, so the cat could come in if he wanted to. That kind of activity is what arises out of this practice. And only that kind of activity. Only that kind. That's what I submit. Only that kind of activity. That is rare, but that is true. Compassion arises out of this practice. Don't be confused about that.
Did the cat go out?
I don't know. We didn't see it go in and we didn't see it go out. But I looked this morning and it wasn't in the house, but it wasn't raining. So I don't know.
With respect to the case of the donkey in the well, when I was driving in this morning, I was thinking of a pack mule and how its utility, its usefulness. And I was thinking when it's looking into the well, that mindless response would be one of having carried the burdens of so many things and people, that it would be a response of renewal, looking into the well.
In regard to the thought about emptiness and creativity being translated as Ujjayi, I remember that in the Blofield translation of the I Ching, the principle of yang, space, is called the creative. As opposed to the principle of yin, the receptive. And the yang is all potential. All potential, the yin is all realization. So in that very old Chinese text, at least according to that translation, that, and I assume that is certainly the concept, this is the river mindlessly carrying the flowers. And in that context also, I think I agree with you, that is the wellspring of creativity, which, as Karen, I think, beautifully, I really like the way she pointed out of the formality comes the spontaneity, which is not the mind, not ordinary mind, comes not from ordinary mind.
Did you have a question, Malia?
With the story of the donkey and the well, I can't help but imagine the well is empty and dry. Which is in the realm of possibility, I suppose.
That's in the realm of possibility. I choose to imagine that it has water in it. But, you know, it's not essential, you know. It's not really essential whether it does or not, you know. But another commentator who I respect a lot thinks there's water in the well. That's all I can say.
Well, I also heard that even in a desert, a flower blooms.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Even in a desert, a flower blooms.
Especially if it rains.
Yeah. Even if it only gets an inch of water. Well, Malia, do you have what is it about the dry well? What does that indicate for you then?
I don't know. It adds more potential drama to the story. as people are talking, I'm thinking the well. If someone dug the well, it was probably at one point it probably had water in it. And may again, even if it's temporarily dry, you know.
Well, maybe then, you know, we could get too carried away with this metaphor. Yeah. But yeah, I think I'll just let it go.
I think if the well were dry, we would have been told that it was a dry well. I don't know. I just think that would be the case.
Drove a Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. We would have been told like that.
Who would have told us?
What?
I was thinking about the donkey, and even though you say we have to do conscious effort, I was like encouraging myself, thinking, well, the donkey's just staring. It's not doing anything. It's kind of a dumb animal. So I'm just going to be like this donkey and not really worry about what happens when I'm sitting and just let it happen to me.
Well, you know, there are other translations, and you know, we're reading from the Chinese, so all translations stipulate that there's a well, but not all translations stipulate that there's a donkey. I'm not going to go into it, though. We want to keep on our schedule.